And welcome back to the SEC on CBS podcast here on CBS Sports. I am your host, Chip Patterson. Dennis Dodd joins me for another Doddcast edition of the SEC on CBS podcast. We will discuss, among other things, the issues in the SEC East, whether we see Alabama losing. We begin with the college football playoff rankings and whether the Big Ten has eclipsed the SEC for the best conference in the country. Make sure that you subscribe to the SEC on CBS podcast on iTunes, TuneIn, or Stitcher so that you can get the episodes first and enjoy Dennis Dodd. Back here on the SEC on CBS podcast, Dennis Dodd joins the show. It is a Doddcast edition of the SEC on CBS podcast. Dennis, good morning as we record here on this Wednesday morning. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's hard to believe we've got, what, 4 weeks to go in the season? Unbelievable.
Only two more data points for some teams.
That's right.
You know, we've already started to see those loss columns get up into the 7, 8s, 9s, and so there are no win-less teams, so everyone's at least gotten a participation trophy somewhere in college football. The college football playoff rankings were released last evening. Busy news night, but the top four of all of the results that came out on Tuesday night, November 8th, Dennis, I think the top four of the college football playoff were the least surprising. Alabama, Clemson, Michigan, and Washington are the only four Power Five teams that are undefeated. Western Michigan is the fifth team in college football undefeated and still undefeated after winning on Tuesday night. But Dennis, when you have four Power Five teams, one from each conference, all undefeated, it would be at this point, as November continues to advance and we get closer to Selection Sunday, it almost seems like disingenuous or intellectually dishonest for us not to group these teams up near the top.
That's a great way to put it, because I think that the discussion now is, if there is one, about Washington at four. It started last week when the committee put A&M up there, and obviously, you know, with a schedule that included, upon further review, because I didn't look at it right away, Prairie View, A&M, and New Mexico State, really? But that's, you know, they got punished and A&M dropped all the way down to number eight. So, in other words, the second best two-loss team in the country. But back to Washington, yes. It's almost as if the East Coast bias is real and, you know, their games are on at all hours of the night. And Washington's schedule does come into play. By the way, Washington has beaten Utah and Texas, which, don't laugh, because if we want to talk about strength of schedule, then, you know, you have to factor in that along with their Portland State. And I think it's the eye test. I think they have to be in there. I made a point of staying up and watching their game to completion against Cal, 704 yards. John Ross, to me right now, is an All-American receiver, and we know about Jake Browning. I think they're, part of the reason is everything I've just mentioned, and they're not a sexy team. You know, they're not Jim Harbaugh. They're not Deshaun Watson. They're not the best defense of all time at Alabama. They're Washington. So, yes, they deserve to be in there. In this game of musical chairs, I think it's really easy to do it this week with the Big 12 being all but out, with those four being the four best teams. I think it's really easy.
And I think that we're in a position that Washington, and I'm curious to hear what you have to say about this, Washington, Alabama, maybe not Michigan, but certainly Washington, Alabama are in a position where they could probably lose and still be able to finish in the top four.
Well, all four of them, because if Michigan loses at any point, and they've still got, let's see, Iowa and Indiana before Ohio State, I think the short answer is if they lose a game, they can still win their conference championship.
But if they lose to Ohio State and they lose out on the Big Ten East, they can't. Like, the ultimate asterisk to all this is, when are you losing? And not necessarily when as in the date on the calendar, but who is the opponent?
Yeah. No, but that's my point. Yeah, that comes with a big asterisk. But they are in a position right now, yes.
Because USC's coming to town, and USC is playing well, and I would not be surprised if the Trojans win that game.
I wouldn't be either. But they could lose that game, still beat Washington State, talking about Washington, win the North and win the Pac-12. So, you know, again, we could see all four of those conceivably with one loss being in the top four on December 3rd or whatever it is. In Ohio State, by that time they would have two losses. Louisville would have the best argument at 11-1, but wouldn't have the 13th data point. So I don't say it could happen easily. I just think there is a little bit of cushion built in for those four right now. Depending on the right game.
Now, having said all that, I don't think Alabama loses.
I don't think they do. Auburn's playing pretty well.
They
seem to have things to get. This Cameron Petway, they're back to their power running ways that Gus Malzahn loves out of the spread. They're getting more than enough out of Sean White. We could do a whole podcast on why Jonathan Franklin started and Sean White made a miraculous recovery at halftime to lead them over Vanderbilt.
Wasn't he cured by Dr. Jerry Punch?
Dr. Jerry Punch cured him. Massaged his shoulder, whatever it was, knee, I don't know what it was.
It was supposed to be a shoulder.
Supposed to be a shoulder, and then in direct correlation to
John
Vanderbilt's
Franklin.
Competitiveness in the game, that shoulder was cured. So I don't think they're going to lose. You're right.
I think that Auburn is going to have a couple big plays in the Iron Bowl. You know, they are too good. They are executing their offense well. This Alabama team is phenomenal, but not perfect. Mm-hmm. I absolutely could see they get caught slipping, as they say, on one or two plays. But, man, I don't know if I could see Auburn being able to – I think they could affect Jalen Hurts. But, man, Alabama, I feel so confident – Dennis, I feel so confident in Alabama winning the rest of its games before the playoff that I'm ready to pick against Alabama in the playoff.
Yeah, I agree. Alabama season or excellence boils down to this for me. Name me how many teams can reach the quarterback with four on a consistent basis. And that's a rarity in college football. Alabama can. And that's why they go into every game with an advantage. Think about this. Jalen Hurts had an interception and a fumble lost on the road at LSU in a nothing-nothing game, and they won by 10. Jalen Hurts made some plays, obviously, but the defense was good enough to make up for that. So I think maybe Clemson, but I don't think so. I've seen Clemson play. They can't reach the quarterback consistently with four.
No,
I
think
it's in the NFL. Yeah,
I think it's Clemson. I think it's Clemson, and I think it's LSU.
Yeah,
I think that those are teams that can just send their defensive line and let their linebackers sit back and make plays in space, and it creates that unique advantage. That, like, I think sorry to cut you off, but I think you just said it's it's just that sort of thing where okay, everyone on the defensive front is a pro. And right. Your linebackers are pros, and the linebackers make plays in space, fly to the ball, have incredible closing speed. Hello, Reuben Foster. And your defensive linemen have to be double teamed. And so someone's going to get through.
And the key to stopping a spread offense, not that they play spread offenses every week, but everyone usually does play them most weeks, is to stop the opposing team with the fewest players in the box as possible, because they want to spread you out. So you've got to have good tacklers like Eddie Jackson. You've got to have sticky corners like Minkah Fitzpatrick. You've got to have great, guys. You have to have great middle linebacker like Sean Dion Hamilton. And they do that almost to perfection. It's really, really hard to do that. And they do it better than anybody else.
We have a scenario where Alabama could be meeting a team in the SEC championship game that has a 4-4 conference record. SEC East chaos. We're used to seeing this in the Pac-12 South. We're used to seeing this in the ACC Coastal. But Dennis, in the SEC, Oh, the whole division is an infirmary.
Well, look, this is an extreme, but let's not forget the SEC's lost 7 straight SEC championship games, and all those teams haven't been the greatest of opposition. Missouri twice, although they did, I think they led or were close to Auburn after 3 quarters, but they gave up 300 rushing yards to one guy, Trey Mason. Yeah, we're looking at a situation where everybody in the East may have at least 3 losses, and if we're going to have a discussion about schedule strength in any given week, that drags the SEC down. They're not number one right now. The Big Ten has been the best conference, I would say, for most of the season. Now, it's a week-by-week proposition, I'll give you that. But right now, with everybody having 2 losses, at least 2 losses, it looks really bad, to the point, I'm going to drop a little knowledge on you here. One metric has the Mountain West Mountain Division rated ahead of the SEC East.
Is that Sagarin?
Yes. No, I'm not sure. Someone told me that this week, and that is the group that includes Wyoming, Boise State, New Mexico, Colorado State, Air Force, Utah State. That's a good group, actually. They're all, let's see, 5, I'm saying 4 of the 6 are bowl eligible. So, and one of them, Boise State, may play in the Cotton Bowl. So, yeah, it's bad. It's beyond mediocre now. It's bad. Anybody who saw Florida, Arkansas knows that that offense now is torturous to watch.
Well, that was the fifth or sixth best team, maybe fifth best team in the SEC West, just dominating the potential SEC East champion.
And I was surprised. I wasn't surprised at the loss. I was surprised at the beatdown.
I was surprised that Florida's defense got whipped in the trenches like that.
I was too. And the fact that they didn't compete better. It was almost like, okay, let's get past this one. Because they knew, oh yeah, Arkansas's offensive line is mediocre, which it is, but not Saturday, you know, on any given Saturday. So, and that lets Kentucky in the door, that lets Tennessee in the door, and it's a cautionary tale. I'm not going to say it's going to happen, but you know, when you get an 8-4 team playing the best team in the country, and that team is upset, you know they're one upset from the SEC easily being taken out of CFP.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Oh easily. Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah.
Again, just phenomenal amounts of confidence in just whoever comes out of the SEC East not being able to score. Like that's like Alabama's not perfect, but dog man, they go into every single game just thinking, no, we'll pitch a shutout. We can play for as long as you want to play, and our field goal kicker Adam Griffith might miss 3 kicks, but you're not scoring. No.
By the way, 13 shutouts for Alabama since the 2011 season. 13. That's an entire season of shutouts in 5 years.
That's incredible. That's incredible.
6 years, I'm sorry.
Does that include the championship game?
That includes, yes, it does.
We're going to look back at the championship game like that is the winged victory sculpture or something like that. Like it was Nick Saban's great masterpiece. Goodness gracious. Football art with Chip Patterson and Dennis Dodd.
Sidewalk chalk.
Yeah. So what do you think happens in I want to get back to your statement on the Big Ten, but real quickly, before, like, Tennessee beating Kentucky would knock out Kentucky. It also keeps Tennessee alive. Tennessee is 2-3 in conference play right now, and because it has the head-to-head advantage against Florida from that streak-snapping win earlier this season, then if Florida loses again, Florida hosting South Carolina, then going to play LSU the following week, if Florida loses either one of those games, or both, obviously, and Tennessee is able to win out, Tennessee facing Kentucky this weekend, Missouri, and Vanderbilt, Tennessee could get to Atlanta. Now, where is a Volunteers fan? Like, where can a Volunteers fan look at a Tennessee team in the SEC championship game, which was the goal at the beginning of the season?
Yeah.
And be able to take something from that, even if the competitiveness of that team is not what anyone thought?
I think so. It's net progress for Butch Jones. They would have done better than they did last year, which was 9-4, and not getting to the SEC championship game and blowing two games. This would have been something they could hang their hat on. Possibly being swept by Alabama, but Alabama's better than everybody else. But at least to get there, to give yourself a chance, I think, would wipe away a lot of sins, which includes, look, a lot of injuries. Right? And that's a legitimate excuse for Tennessee. Besides some bad play right there in the middle and losing to South Carolina. So it would have turned out, hey, they would have won the East anyway had they beaten South Carolina. I don't want to say it didn't matter because it was embarrassing, but it's a bad loss, but they can still get there at 9-3, it looks like. And that wouldn't be bad for Tennessee. That would be a net win.
Yeah. It was wild to come back to that after Florida lost to Arkansas and realizing that, the Volunteers team that shows up is not going to have a Jalen Hurd. It's not going to have all the future NFL players totally healthy, but heck, it might have a Josh Dobbs or an Alvin Kamara or a Cameron Sutton back in the lineup.
By the way, I don't mean to hijack this, but how about Jalen Hurd? I don't understand that. If you just take it at face value, he wants to transfer where he can play wide receiver and tight end. Did I read that? From a place where he led an SEC team in rushing and touched the ball way more times than he would as a wide receiver or tight end. I don't get that. Maybe I'm missing something.
Dennis, he was 400 yards away from becoming the program's all-time leading rusher.
Right.
I think, do you remember on National Signing Day a few years back, Jalen Hurd had just committed to Tennessee and a cell phone video, or no, it wasn't a cell phone video. It was one of ESPN's war room cameras showed T. Martin, then at USC, questioning the young man's gut, internal intestinal fortitudes.
His chest,
as Les Miles would say. He might. I don't want to. I forgot. I don't want to step out of line here, but do you remember that? It sort of became a minor flame.
I don't.
Like, I think he said something along the line of, that guy is a beep. Like, they were showing Jalen Hurd film on the camera because they were watching the ESPN thing. The coaches didn't know the cameras.
He called him soft and terrible.
Soft and terrible.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you, thank you for looking that up. So when I remember that T. Martin, national championship winner T. Martin, called Jalen Hurd soft and terrible, it's not going to surprise me when he washes out of a locker room.
Yeah, yeah. I don't confess to knowing the inside story there. It just seems so weird to me. But look, hey, more touches for Alvin Kamara, who I like and love as a player because he's so versatile. And it'll be really interesting. Look to see how Tennessee responds to these last three eminently winnable games to possibly get there. I mean, they should beat Kentucky, Missouri, and Vanderbilt, and given their team handling pretty well.
All right, so you made the argument. You have made it on College Football Rundown, which listeners can check out on CBS Sports and the CBS Sports app every weekday at 6 o'clock. Dennis is the all-star guest I pop up from time to time. The Big Ten. The era of the Big Ten was a conversation that I remember just it began with the arrival of Harbaugh. And now, as we come to a conclusion of, because it was the arrival of Harbaugh and Ohio State's national championship. Now the Big Ten, whether it's energy, whether it's attention, whether it's buzz, this is reaching a new height in terms of where it compares to the SEC. The conference power rankings picture is always cloudy. How do you judge these two leagues against each other?
It's easy this week, and I always get it from Brady Quinn if I don't pick the SEC, but he agreed with me this week that the Big Ten is number one, and it's pretty easy on many levels. Their five ranked teams average a top 10 ranking. It's like 9.6, and that includes Nebraska with a bad loss at 21. I get that. But Michigan, Alabama, 1-2, three Big Tens in the top seven. You know, I think the fact that Trevor Knight was injured at Texas A&M helped separate the two conferences in some small little way. So I just think the Big Ten is the best in the country. You mentioned it, 13 days before Ohio State won that championship in 14, Jim Harbaugh got hired at Michigan, and everything's changed since then.
Yep.
Really. You got Wisconsin as a definite playoff contender. All the old perception that they're old and slow and white and can't possibly recruit anymore and football's gone to the Sun Belt. Well, no, it's alive and well in the Big Ten. It's doing well.
The Mike Riley Nebraska hire laughed off by some at the time. Mm-hmm. Look at that. Paul Crist, not at the top of any Bovada odds emails for head coaching jobs. But look how that's worked out. I think that Harbaugh was the rock star hire. James Franklin was a rock star hire. But the rest just seems to be not rock star, but just rock solid. And where the SEC East is currently in the middle of reloading, you know.
Yeah.
We're still early Jim McElwain. We're still early, you know, Kirby Smart. We're still early Will Muschamp. You know, it's going to take a couple recruiting cycles before I think the SEC East is even going to make up any of the ground that they've lost here. It is a fascinating time. Do you see the Purdue job is the only one that's open now? Do you think that any other jobs are going to open up in the Big Ten? Because
I'm trying to think. I don't think so.
DJ Durkin and Chris Ash, so that's another thing.
Yeah, they've got two bright new coaches there. I actually think the Purdue job is pretty good because they should never be that bad that they are now, and I know they put money into it. I think they're building an indoor, which is huge for any program or any coach to get up there. And they're putting a financial commitment towards being competitive. They'll be fine. You know, I've heard whispers that Lovey's going to be one and done at Illinois, but I don't think Illinois has the stomach or the wallet for that. It's an off year at Michigan State. DJ Durkin and Chris Ash are just getting started. Kevin Wilson's getting it going at Indiana, I think, to the point that they look like the third best team in the East right now. So, we'll see. I don't anticipate any more changes there.
Couple of Big 12 games kicking off early that are going to have a lot of impact on the Big 12 title race. It's getting going early. This Saturday, West Virginia going to play Texas as going on at the same time as Baylor's trip to Oklahoma. Both games will probably end about 6 p.m. after 1,000 points and 4 overtimes. Okay, let's start with Baylor. The storylines off the field dominated the conversation until TCU was done putting the 62nd point on the board. The coach Art Briles shirts got a lot of attention. The statement posted by all of the assistants together defending Art Briles and one of the particular instances of sexual assault allegations and how the report was handled. Mm-hmm. But the thing that was the most concerning to me is Jim Grobe coming out and not only telling us that he wasn't aware of the statement, but admitting that it wasn't only the fact that he wasn't aware, but the fact that he was even willing to admit it felt like a parent at the theme park who's thrown his hands up and said, you know what? I can't control the kids anymore. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody was built to take over this interim job at Baylor because they just can't help themselves. It took some chatty Regents to talk to the Wall Street Journal to finally seal, I think, everyone's opinion on Art Briles as a coach anymore. He's not going to be, at least in major college, maybe high school or JUCO or NAIA, but he's done. The assistants won't shut up. And they should be lucky they have jobs. Apparently, they live in some alternate universe where they think they were railroaded. You guys got jobs. Your head coach got fired. You guys are actually walking the earth with jobs. I would stay out of it. And look, just like we tell our kids to watch it on social media, this is going to be on their permanent record wherever they go next, because I can tell you right now, their time on the job is about 2 months, maybe.
Yeah.
They're not going to be retained because the school doesn't want them to be retained and the new coach won't want them. So I don't know what they're gaining out of all this. Protect your reputation, protect your brand, what little you have left of it.
Coaches, stand up for coaches. That's the, and
yeah,
you know, to the point where I'm not in the coaching fraternity. I can't know. I cannot know what that loyalty must be, but it sure as hell looks strong seeing the Baylor assistants ride for Art Briles like this.
It's over. You know what? I don't know what's to be gained out of this. Okay, Art Briles is great. He's a great guy. He's a great coach. If you wash away everything, this happened on his watch, and that's the least that happened. That's reason enough to get fired. Can we all agree on that? It's over. You know, it's just leave it alone. Mm.
The other game, West Virginia going to play Texas in Austin. Texas is the Vegas favorite in this game. Dennis, is this a strong final charge from the Longhorns, or how do you expect this one to play out?
I do think that Texas is going to win its final three games. I think they have an identity now. Dante Foreman is the leading rusher in the country. They're really pushing him for Heisman consideration, and Doak Walker. And they know their defense is substandard. I think they've got the goods now to just outscore everybody and win. West Virginia has the league's best defense. Dana Holgorsen is probably the coach of the year in the Big 12, I would say.
I agree.
Right now, even if they lose. But I can't believe I'm saying this. I think Texas is on a roll. And we know exactly what they're going to do.
It's not a job-saving role, though, is it?
I think if I'm saying he wins those last three games, Charlie Strong, then he definitely saves his job because of that, and because I don't know if there's an obvious person out there to go to right now for them. I know it's Texas, but Tom Herman's lost twice. The defense is troubling. The shine's off a little bit. They're not going to get Jimbo Fisher. I don't think they're going to get Jimbo Fisher. I think he goes to LSU before Texas. So, you know, and you know, if you're going to get on this coaching carousel, that's a dangerous place to be. When you're changing coaches every 2 or 3 years, you're upheaval, culture, recruiting.
And at the athletic director position, too.
And the AD position, which, by the way, Mike Perrin's not going to make the call. At Texas, it's going to be the president who I told very strongly on Saturday that Greg Fenves loves Charlie. Now that could change if they lose two of these last three games and
finish 5-7.
But I'm starting to think he makes it.
Wow.
And a lot of that is because I think they'll win these last three games.
So what happened? Does Baylor become the most attractive job in the state of Texas?
Yeah, I mean, because it's the most high profile open. I'm assuming that's assuming that Tom Herman doesn't go, because I don't know if there's a place for him this year right now. And I think they'll get somebody good. I talked to some people this week. They are very interested in Sonny Dykes and Larry Fedora. Mm. Those names you probably read, but that's real at Baylor. Because that continues the culture, the offensive culture, which you're going to have in the Big 12. Larry Fedora, there are two people walking the planet who have won 10 games at North Carolina, Mac Brown and Larry Fedora. So that says something. And I hear that Larry Fedora really wants to get back to Texas. I think he's a Texas guy.
He was born in College Station.
Yeah, so that would be a natural fit. And if they get – yeah, if they get someone early enough, which I think they will, they'll shore up this recruiting situation, which has only two commits for 17. And I read a story this week where Baylor wasn't even out there actively recruiting, you know, which is another indictment on these assistants. They're spending more time on their keyboards than they should doing their jobs, which they know they're going to be gone, but be professional about
it. That was my cheap shot. My cheap shot when I was on camera on Saturday was a little bit more time preparing for TCU's rushing attack, a little less time preparing defensive statements.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. I agree.
He is Dennis Dodd. You can follow him on Twitter at DennisDoddCBS. Dennis, are you anywhere this weekend?
Yes, I am at Iowa, Michigan.
Ooh.
To get a look at the Wolverines. Not particularly a great game, but at this point, you know, a great team. Mm. Frankly, I want to be in the inside with Coach Khaki and the boys.
The slobs will be knocked. It is a slobber knocker when Michigan and Iowa play.
I don't think so much this year with Iowa, but I may be wrong.
There will be punts from plus territory.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. Dennis, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right, Chip. Thanks so much.